Every successful person got there by going through tough times. Success is a hard-ass teacher who likes to knock you around along that journey. You know, it takes real guts to not give up and keep going. We'll hear stories about failures and how these leaders flipped the script to create success. I'm John Schultz. Join me and let's discover how success is never really overnight. So welcome to the John Schultz podcast. Very excited for this podcast. I love when I have podcasts with people in my industry, meaning you're residential, I'm more commercial, but it's always exciting to talk shop. Bess is the CEO of Brown Harris Stevens. She joined as senior vice president in 2013 and grew to CEO, which is amazing. She oversees 50 plus offices and nearly 3,000 agents. I mean, I don't know how you do that. That's too many people for me, but it's across New York, Connecticut, New Jersey, Florida. And under her leadership, this is an amazing statistic, it was one of the largest, most successful private companies in the United States, but she had the highest average sales per agent.
That's right.
To me, that's like the business, right? That everyone is productive. So kudos to you. And, you know, her insights are everywhere. We know that, right? We see her all over social media. We love that. You know, CNBC, New York Times, Wall Street Journal, Bloomberg, Forbes, The Real Deal. That's a real estate publication we like. So welcome and thank you so much for being here and doing this.
John, thank you so much for having me. And, you know, since we've chatted, I've been listening to your podcast, which is really good. And you have great people on there. So keep doing what you're doing.
Another one today, you. So thanks again for doing this. So, you know, to me, what I love learning is about people and their stories. And, you know, I like going all the way back to when they're young. So when you were growing up, how would you describe yourself and how would your parents describe you?
Yeah, I mean, I always say I hit the lottery, had great parents. My mom's still here. My dad, I lost in a car accident 30 years ago, but grew up in upstate New York in Troy. You know, went to public school, went to Hebrew school, great mom and dad who really just believed in me and my brothers and also didn't overparent. You know, if you wanted to do something, you just did it. If I wanted to go ice skating, I had to get my skates and walk to the rink, you know, so they empowered us to be our own people. And I was always that little kid that would go to the neighbors and talk to people and, you know, would be able to get things by talking to people, encourage them. I was always good at relationships from an early age. And my parents also taught us how to love and how to be generous. Because remember, love is learned. You don't wake up, you know, as a little baby and know love. You learn it from your parents and your environment. And my parents walked that walk by picking up hitchhikers and buying them train, you know, tickets to wherever they had to go and feeding people and all that stuff. They led by example. So I was really fortunate in that area.
I don't know today if I could pick up a hitchhiker. Maybe like
it's a different world today, John. You know, we can't do a lot of things. My parents, you know, listen, we never locked the doors. We had play dates. My parents were never watching who we played with. We just went out in the neighborhood. We played, we came home for dinner and it was that. And you got up and you know, today everything is so micromanaged that kids don't learn their own independence and we rob them of that.
I used to get home from school and not come back till dinner.
Same. It was great. You were out in the world. You were playing. You were building. You were digging up worms, making forts. I mean, this is what we did. And we came home and we ate. We ate whatever my mom put on the table. It wasn't, I don't eat that. I'm gluten-free. No, it was, this is what we're eating. Yeah. That's it. There was no like crap about, you know, you didn't get to choose what you got to eat.
I agree.
Different world. It was a different world.
So, and it's nice to have that and you're fortunate. So am I. I mean, I have the same experience growing up. When you were younger,
yeah.
Because I remember mine. Like when I was in middle school, I was actually bullied. Like I had three or four kids that gave me a really hard time. And
about what? What did they? What were they bullying you about?
It was just making fun of me. It was more, it was no reason except I was the person at that point in time that they were focused on. There was no real, it's not like I did anything to them. But like, I remember I had to deal with it And then, you know, it was horrible. But once I got through it, I did get this like little confidence boost that I remember.
Yeah,
I remember it today. And there's, you know, I have trouble remembering last week. So it's way, it's great when you could have these experiences. What were one of your, what one, two of yours that you think like molded you a little bit when you were younger?
There are a few. I mean, I wasn't bullied a lot, but there were instances where, you know, believe it or not, it was the '70s and there, you know, a lot of pennies thrown at me, you know, called Jew and all that. So a lot of anti-Semitism, which I didn't understand. It's swastikas on our fort. Didn't really get it. I mean, we were Jews in the community and we were proud of that. But as there is today, there was then a lot of anti-Semitism. So I kind of recognized that, okay, we're different from some people and people are recognizing that and pointing their fingers at us. But, you know, that was one thing. The other thing was, and I've told this story, you know, Bella Abzug, who I'm sure you're familiar who she was. She was one of the first women in the House of Representatives. She ran for mayor. She was this sort of boisterous woman who wore a hat and spoke about women and their rights. And when I was 9, my mom took me to RPI where she spoke. And she talked about being a lawyer and women and all the things that we can do. And when I listened to her, a light turned on in me. And I said to my mom, I'm going to be a lawyer. I'm going to do this. And I wrote it all out. I still have it. And so that sort of turned a corner for me as a little kid at 9 years old. It made me think, I want to be a voice. I want to do things to help people. And I think I can. And so that was sort of, you know, I would say my moment or a moment of where I recognize I was going to do something like be a lawyer and help people.
I love that. So she was your role model, right? Which is,
yes.
Which is interesting. And isn't it amazing how we get role models from the controversies that we.
Of course.
Feel? Like mine's like Rocky and Rudy. Cause like, I really did feel like an underdog. I still do. I feel like an underdog my entire life.
Yeah.
So I gravitated towards them and they gave me the strength in the movies to actually
do a lot of things. Underdog is always, you know, the unsung hero, the one that comes from tougher circumstances,
yep.
Doesn't have everything, who's like scrappy and gritty. Like we kind of gravitate towards that. You do, I do, because you work a little bit harder. You know, you don't have all those sort of comforts that other people might have growing up. And so it builds a stronger you. It's almost like a gift. At the time, you don't feel it as you're living through it, but it's a gift to have to fight for everything.
I feel if people would realize that it is the gift. And first of all, you get through it. It still hurts, but you at least you know there's a good outcome in theory when you're done.
Well, you know? John, you have kids, right? You have children. So imagine if you just give them everything. Everything they want and protect them from ever having to feel or fight for things. When they become adults, how are they going to function in the world or deal or do things? So today's world, almost a lot of the parenting, and it's not criticism. I see it in myself a little bit too. We rob our kids of what we had. You know, we protect them too much because we don't want this to happen or that. It's good for them to struggle, even though it's hard for us as parents to do it, but part of love is letting them learn and figure it out, right?
All right, I totally agree. All right, so here you are, this little 9-year-old wanting to be a lawyer. That's wild. I wanted to be in entertainment. Like, I actually wanted to be Rocky, and I wanted to be in a movie. But, you know, so now I have a podcast, so maybe that's my
entertainment
that I'm getting. So, okay, you went through high school. I guess you went to college, obviously. And
law school. I went to college. I went to law school. I was a prosecutor for a few years and had a great mentor who I'm still great friends with. His name is Danny Barnett, who was my boss. And that was a great education for me because I had cases, I had a trial, I was in court, had to speak in front of a judge. And it taught me perhaps my most important lessons on how to communicate, how to negotiate, how to work with people from all different backgrounds and help them, you know? And so I had that job for a while, which was one of my greatest jobs.
Did you ever go to many trials?
Yeah. I mean, I had a docket. It was like, you know, it was, I was in district court, so it was in front of a judge and it was like small. I had a few jury trials, but most of my stuff was like 100 cases. They were DWIs, some drug cases, that kind of stuff. But it was great because you had your information. I worked with the police a lot, did community policing. It was an incredible experience for a young person out of law school to do that and work with people and try to, you know, fix things. And it wasn't just about prosecuting people. It was also listening to what happened to them. And maybe there was a solution and maybe they could get help. And so that was a wonderful experience for me. And so I had that job. After that job, I also worked at Legal Aid here in New York City with juveniles. So I did do the lawyer thing for a little bit of time.
Listen, I think the lawyer education is just such a good education for anything that you do. Teaches you how to read, how to critically think, yep. How to express yourself in words, which is very important, and also in speech. So I think it's no matter what, I think it's an additive to whatever you're going to do.
I agree. It's a right? big, and it can, it, exactly. It helping you to think a little bit, critical thinking, which we are so lacking today. A lot of groupthink going on, which is okay, but it can be harmful.
Well, it's hard to think and say when you're worried that someone's going to like take you out. Right.
So right.
It's scary time when it comes to all this. Right. Hopefully it's going to change for the better. All right. So the lawyer thing's going well. How did this real estate thing happen? Right. Because it sort of doesn't match real.
No, it absolutely does not match. And, I was working at Legal Aid, expecting my daughter, who is now 21 at Berklee School of Music.
Nice.
She's finishing up there. And so I came home with this little baby and was supposed to go back to work as a lawyer. And, you know, I had some hesitation about it. I was on maternity leave. And a friend of mine suggested, I was at my mom's knitting store on the Upper East Side, and she suggested that maybe I should get into real estate, that I'm a lawyer, I could dress the part, I seem smart, articulate, have all the things that you need. And so I said, you know what, I'm going to take a chance. I can make my own hours. And I got into it. I worked at Corcoran with Pam, who I know was on this podcast, who is a friend and was a mentor to me in my career. So I worked at Corcoran as an agent. I loved it. It was entrepreneurial. And a lot of my skills as a lawyer, I used as an agent, you know, being on time, you know, listening, which we need to do more of. Taking care of people, putting the client's interest first. So I did really well. And then I got asked to get into management at Corcoran, which I did. And my career sort of took off after I did that. And then Brown Harris Stevens, I've been here 11 years. They asked me to come in as like the number two person working with Hall. And I did, and sort of just put my head down and went to work and loved it and love everything
and
that I do.
What's your favorite part about it, right? Because like being in real estate, you have to be able to convert beliefs, right? I hate the word sales, but it's out there. What was your favorite part in like the business when you were younger and getting through it?
I love the negotiating portion of it. I love helping people to do that and working with people. I mean, because I always say it's not a real estate business, a relationship business. What we do at the highest level is manage relationships with each other, with the agents and with the clients, and taking care of people. And, you know, we have a crap image right now as real estate professionals in the residential arena because of the reality shows that continue to come out, you know, Selling Sunset, Million Dollar Listing, all of those things portray us as these sort of heartless people who just want to make money at any cost and don't care about the client. And it just does a disservice to what we do, John, because if you watch what agents do all day, you would fall asleep. It is not intriguing.
Right.
You know, they're looking at floor plans, they're getting photos done, they're on the phone all the time. It's hard work. And it's 7 days a week. And what the TV shows you is just not what we do. And so the consumer has sort of this, you know, confusion about it. And I would love to sort of fix that. I just say, show up, be a professional, do the job really well. And that helps. But there's still this misconception out there.
No, I know it's show. Like, I'm from Jersey, right? The Jersey Shore show. They're not even from Jersey yet. You know, everyone had a depiction of what
people have that in their mind. And we know, you know, it's like when The Sopranos came out and, you know, people were like Italian, you know, people were very upset because they felt it portrayed Italians in a poor light, which it did. But obviously, that's just a small segment, you know, and it's there's some truth, there's some not, you know, it's, and the same thing with real estate professionals, these shows, if you want to get people to watch, it's got to be edgy. It's got to have women with their boobs out in short skirts with overdone makeup and guys, you know, doing all, if it doesn't have that, people aren't going to watch it. It's like the housewives shows.
Right.
You're not going to watch it unless they're yelling at each other and unless they're, you know, doing things that are like, you're like, you can't believe it. So that's
a good thing now.
Yeah.
And because we're going to have that. It's not going to go away. They want to sensationalize everything.
That's right.
With sales, ads, and all the stuff that we do. But we look at us. We're on a podcast. Like all the documentaries now they're doing in sports that you get to know the players for who they are. They're not just this thing that's out there. I think we can take it back by doing things like this and actually, you know, thank God we're afforded those channels today.
Which no, I agree with you completely. I think it's really important. And I'm grateful that you do these because you're educating the community, which is so important. But the other challenge we have, and it's just prevalent right now, is social media, which, you know, recently the actress, I don't know if you saw this, Julia Roberts, there was a post of her, she and her niece playing cards.
I saw that.
Yeah. And she posted and she said, look, I'm Julia Roberts. I'm in my 50s. I know who I am. She's a celebrity. She's beautiful. And people made these mean comments about how she looked. And she said, and it really hurt me. So what chance does a 15-year-old kid have who's on social media? It's just
tough.
That's damaging in particular for women. And back to the real estate thing to tie it in is that I want young women to want to get into real estate. It's a great profession. I love what I do. And you can be smart and attractive and do all these things without over-sexualizing yourself. And that's what worries me about these shows because they portray us in not a good light. I want them to see their brain. I want, you know, you're smart. You can do so much. It's not just your looks. You have so much more. As Judge Judy says, beauty fades, stupid lasts forever.
Yes.
And you gotta work on, you gotta do your homework.
Well, hopefully, you know, it's also, you know, we're seeing so much of it. You don't even know what's real and not anymore. So like it's almost, you can get your head into something that's, you think's happening that might not even be happening. So.
Right. You don't even know what's real and what isn't.
Right. So, all right. So, okay. But here you are, you got to get through that. You got this gigantic company. What has been the hardest thing for you? Because I believe like we're our character traits that we're great at, that stuff flows. It becomes easier.
Right.
As a CEO of 3,000 people scattered around all these different places. What's been your biggest challenge? What keeps you up at night? Because that's usually what happens. And how do you get through it?
Yeah, I mean, the biggest challenge that I've had is when we merged Halsted into Brown Harris Stevens during the pandemic, because you're bringing together two different cultures. And so we merged these huge companies together. And so that was a huge undertaking in integrating the back office. So that was tough and getting everybody on board and getting leadership, but it worked out. It has worked out really well. And so now I feel like I'm on the other side of that. So that was one of the bigger challenges. And look, John, I appreciate all the compliments. It's not, you know, it's not me and my leadership. I'm a small piece of an incredible team of people. It's never about one person, right? The presidency is not just about the president. It's about who works with him or her. Hopefully one day we get a her, you know? And so, I have so many great professionals that work with me and our agent base. I always say this is a graduate school for real estate. If you really want to come and be the best at real estate, it's like playing tennis. You come here because you will up your game. The people that work in real estate here are like the best of the best. Sold the most expensive and give the highest like service to people. And it's not just about luxury, you know, price. It's about the service that we give to people. And so I think that we're lucky in that regard, but merging the two companies was hard. And what keeps me up at night is what's happening to our industry. I think, you know, I was talking
about this NAR lawsuit, right? I mean,
yeah, I mean, I've been, it's been emphasized to me that I'm not allowed to talk about it, but yeah, but the lawsuit, yes. It's just frustrating, I will say. And that's all I can say about that. I'll let that get sorted out. It's going to take some time. But again, there's this portrayal that, you know, agents don't deserve their commission. They haven't earned it, you know, or, you know, what they do is easy and they make so much money. And it's, And if people really knew how much time agents put into it, they only get paid for results. So they work really hard, and they care about their clients, but what people think is something else. So we have to do a better job at fixing our image. And I think it's going to take a lot of work, and we're going to focus on doing that. It's what we do at BHS, and we'll continue to.
So I it'll get sorted out. I mean, you know, these things.
One way or the other.
Yeah. You know, I'm in the commercial real estate business. Yeah. And I started out as a broker, right? So like, to me, the value of those, and like you said it, everything's relationships, and, you know, brokers bring relationships and people to the table that, and they only get paid if something happens. Like, no, everyone forgets that.
Well, they don't realize, like, you could have somebody come and do some work for you, and they could do a terrible job in your apartment or your home, and you still have to pay them. In real estate, you can work with somebody for a year, spend all this time on them, and they could not buy something, and that can happen. And then all those hours, you don't get a penny for that. You know, you're building trust with people and working with them. And hopefully for us, like, a lot of our agents have these incredible networks of people that want to work with them. And so, but it is always, it's about that relationship and building trust over time, right?
And there's always people that, you know, you'll have a bad experience, but like, I've had that with doctors. I've had that with lawyers. I mean, we're all human, and I don't want to operate on myself. I don't want to like do it.
You know? I don't want to do my own. I don't want to cut my own hair. You know, that's why people who think they can do real estate on their own as their side job, as they work a full-time job. It's like, we live and breathe this. Like, we study everything. We know everything. We understand it. And we're here to help you. And so it's a service and information business.
There's people that refer. And that's what I love about it. It's an industry that you can make money, you know.
That's
by
right.
Using your relationships the proper way, where, you know, other businesses you can't. The people that are in it full time, 100%, that's a whole different.
That's right.
And those are the people that you want guiding you through these transactions.
Exactly. I agree with you.
So, all right. So, you know, we're in 2024, rates just skyrocket. I mean, you know, we're feeling it. Everyone's feeling it. It went up 500 basis points as fast as it's ever gone up in my, you know, tenure in business. Obviously, we're seeing, you know, a lack of, I would say, momentum. So where do you see things going in 2024? I mean, first of all, we have a housing shortage.
Yeah,
like we do.
We do.
So all these factors are not going to bode well for prices, regardless of interest rates. Where do you see all this going?
I mean, all the economists and people are saying that 2024 should be a better year than 23, because 23 for us was not a great year. And we just saw that inflation is higher than, you know, people want, than the Fed wanted it to be, and that we're probably not going to get a rate cut anytime soon. And you saw the stock market drop a bit yesterday. So I always thought that this year was going to be a little tougher. I don't think it's going to be worse than 23, but I think it's going to take some time. We have a housing crisis. We see all this potential empty office space, and can we get it converted to residential? Like, will it make sense? Can we use some of that? I know there's some of that happening downtown. I know Silverstein is doing a project, you know, but you know how hard that is to actually do it. You know, does it
and
make
it takes
sense?
Years. It's like, it's
it takes
not,
years. Yeah, it's like, yeah. People are like, well, just rip it out. And you're like, well, there's HVAC. What's the floor plate? What's the core? Like, there's so much. And then the zoning, it's not that easy. So there are a lot of challenges. And so I think we have good leadership. I think the governor and mayor support housing in real estate and are pro-business. And so I think it's going to be a tough year, but I think it looks like the market is good. I mean, we're writing a lot of business. So the market is steady. In that sense.
And what area is it, like mid-price? Like, where's most of the business happening right now?
We're seeing it in all. I'm seeing it in the 2 million and under market, and also in the luxury market. I've seen a lot of big deals get signed recently, even of $20 million in the city. I'm talking about specifically New York City. And so it shows me that people are still spending and people want to be in New York City. Despite the narrative that you and I hear that, you know, the city is dangerous, there's crime. We do have challenges, but it's gotten better. If you look at the stats, it's improved. Do you take the subway? I take the subway. And I feel, I mean, late at night, I wouldn't, but I feel safe. I went downtown last night for a dinner. I took the 6 train downtown and it was fine. And you know what? I was standing next to a bunch of police officers on the train. I just think that the city has, people want to be here. We have our challenges, but we have always been able to work through them. And I think Mayor Adams is set on getting us to the right place.
Yeah, I think, first of all, I think the more crowded the subways, the better. Like, people bring security, right? I mean, the police can only see so many things and do so many things in an hour or a day. So I think the more we get people back, and it's happening. I mean, people bring people back to the office. You know,
that's the other challenge, though, John, is that the big topic is that post-pandemic people, I don't know how many people come into your office, but
we're full. We're and being in real estate, like, we were in from a long time ago.
I mean, all of our employees are in. The agents don't come in as much as they used to. Some offices have more attendance than others, but I encourage them to come in because of office culture and like meeting with each other. And you and I both know being in a room with someone is very different than a Zoom. The connection, the human connection, is essential. And so I
don't know how the younger generation will be sustainable. I had someone, I like mentoring young people. I love giving back. And, you know, this person was working at a company for 2 years and never went in. They finally had to go in and they asked me, like, I'm going to my first in-person meeting. Like, how do you act? Like I actually got the question, right? How do I do this? Right. They just graduated. They were out, but they never met anyone. I feel if you're in a relationship business, which real estate is, I don't know how you learn without being around people that have done it. So So how do you get your brokers to, are you going to start pushing for that?
What we do, you can't, they're 1099. So the only thing you do is, like, we have great meetings with people who come in. We have a chief economist, Greg Heim, who everybody loves, and he gives good information. We encourage them to come in. Food is always helpful. You know, we have some food, we cater. And, you know, people, once agents start to come in, they like it. So, you know, it's scary what you just said about, you know, younger people not knowing. Like, the people that don't come into the office, you know, are hurting themselves. Yes, it may be cozy at home, but you need to learn how to talk to people and deal with situations. You're robbing yourself of a whole future.
And learn how to be uncomfortable, like asking a question where you might not know what you're asking.
No people, like, young people do not, and I'm going to get in trouble for this, but discomfort is like, nope, can't be uncomfortable. I'm too, like, that would might, you know, trigger me. You have to be uncomfortable. I mean, not, you know, it's part of learning is you only learn in the tough stuff. You don't learn when it's all smooth sailing. You know, I never learned anything when things were easy. I only learn when I'm like on the floor struggling. So we have to encourage more of that. You know, people are going to, okay, boomer. I'm not a boomer. I'm like Gen X. So don't
call me a boomer. I'm Gen X too. I'm at the cut line. Thank God.
My kids always go, all right, boomer. I'm like, okay.
No one ever talks about Gen X. We're sort of the unseen.
We're so cool, Gen X.
We're the unseen generation. I don't know. I don't get it.
I love Gen X. I mean, but hey, you know, it's my time.
All right. So in saying that, like learning how to be in a meeting and ask a question that, you know, you're not sure how the answer is going to come back at you or if you're asking it right. As someone, and you are a prominent figure, you know, that is not afraid to speak out, what advice would you give people in this day and age and just in your experience on how to do that in a constructive way?
Yeah, I mean, I think what's helpful is, you know, have to listen more. And one of the best pieces of advice that I have gotten, and I say it, is treat your attention like an on or an off switch, not a dimmer. So here I am with you on this podcast. If you were talking to me and I was like, yeah, looking at my phone, or I'm at dinner with you, or we're talking and I'm distracted, or it's not good. It's getting watered down. When I'm with my kids, if I'm looking at my phone, they're not getting me, you know? So give it, be all in or be out. You know, don't try to do, because things get watered down. So I remind myself of that too, because, you know, it's like I had lunch with my mom and I was looking at my phone. She pulled it out of my hand, I kid you not, and put it in the seat. She goes, have lunch with that then. And she stormed off.
Oh, I love that.
I was like, okay, Sylvia.
I think I know where you get some of your stuff.
She doesn't. Yeah, she does not. And she's right. You know, so attention, like we got to like listen to each other and pay attention. And if you can't, I could say, John, I got a fire burning over here. Can't talk to you today, whatever. You would respect me more than if I'm looking at you and then I'm like all over the place. So I try to do that in my personal life and in my professional life. Yeah. And I would say that to young people. My daughter is better at this than me. She is with you. When she's with you, she's with you. She doesn't even look at any of that stuff.
I mean, I don't know if you ever met it, but like Bill Clinton, like there's certain people that when you're with them, no one else is even in your like sphere because they're that focused on you. And those are the people we all gravitate to. So to me, this is the biggest lesson. Like, be there, be focused, and learn how to listen. I mean, this podcast for me has taught me how to listen. I mean,
you extract really good.
I can't just talk, you know?
But you extract really good information out of your guests. And like, this is, you know, I'm here. I learn, you know, we're all here to learn and help. Yep. And I've heard that. I have had friends. I have not met Bill, but I have friends who have met him, and every single one says that. They said the whole world, he makes it seem like the world has stopped and his focus is on you. And, you know, in today's world where nobody feels seen because we're so busy and everybody's looking at their phone, it feels good when
that's a good trait. That's a good trait to teach and right? It's but so important.
Yeah, it's a really good one. I have to remind myself too, by the way.
All right, so you're this, you know, a lot of business we talked about, your career, and it's all great. What does best do for fun? Like, what are some of your
hobbies? Really want to know the truth on this one?
I do. I want to know.
Besides drinking whiskey, which I love, is scotch, but set that to the side because I don't really drink that much. I like it, but I don't do it because I don't feel good from it. But I love a Macallan 12.
There you go.
Perhaps one of my favorite drinks in the world. But I love two things, and I'm going to sound like a nerd. I love Mahjong. It's my game of choice. It's everything to me. I have a group of women I play with.
My mother was amazing.
My mom plays. Yeah. My grandmother played. But I have these women. It's a sisterhood. And I've met them. I've known them for 15 years. Met at my daughter's school. And we play. And we've traveled together. But we four women sit around a table, you know, shuffling the tiles.
It's
and
a
just
challenging
talk.
Game.
It's like bridge. It's
mind game. I mean, to me, it's great.
So to me, that's one of my favorite things in the world to do. I have great women friends and we play. And the other thing that I've done as of recently, it's been a year now, are cold plunges.
Really?
Because they are, it's like a mood enhancer more than anything, but there's a place called Remedy Place downtown where you go, it's 6 minutes, it's 39 degrees, you're in. And when you get out, it just feels, you feel incredible. It's good for everything. Apparently it's good for you physically, but it's good for you mentally. So I've been doing those because I really don't like cold and I wanted to challenge myself.
Are you doing it every day?
No, I wish I could. I have to go all the way downtown, but I try to do it at least once a week if I can.
That's great.
So it's a good
thing. It's like I'm going to move to Florida. You got to be here in the winter. Yeah, I mean, at least you can get some cold that way, like a little snow. I love the seasons.
I mean, the other thing that I love, love, love is I love walking the streets of New York City. I love the city. I love walking the streets. I love listening to my music, walking the streets of the city. To me, that's like Zen at the highest level.
Yeah, I used to live there. I loved it too. Yeah, and you're anonymous, right? I love the whole anonymous walking around.
And there's so many great places to eat and sit and talk to. Like the vibe here is just, New York is, you know, it has its troubles, but there's a vibe in New York City. It's just.
Yeah, but if you're working and doing what you do and what you do at your company, and you can't say what you just said, you should not be in the real estate.
No, I raised my kids in New York City. Right. They, you know, I walked, like I live the city. I breathe the city. This is my homeland. This is where I feel. Now, I will just say this, as of late, it's been a little challenging, and I've had this with a lot of my Jewish friends. They feel a little bit less safe in the city because of what's been going on.
Right.
And that's unfortunate, but I do think we will get over that turn. I think there's more good, more people that care and want to live in love than, you know, be at battle. And I think
totally agree.
Right? And yeah. I think we will, as we always do, overcome and come together as a group, a community, a diverse melting pot of incredible people from all walks of life.
And not to diminish anything that anyone's feeling, but like my grandmother was born in 1905. like she went through depression, two world wars, epidemic, you know, she was born through all of that. Like we've sort of had our world a little bit easier and
little, very cushy.
Right. So
we did not go through any of those things. Your grandmother is a warrior.
She was. Know? She lived to 103.
My grandfather lived to 103 too.
Oh, wow.
They don't make them like that anymore.
No. But the good thing is that, you know, we'll all get through it and we all just got, you know, it's good to learn about what's going on and learn how to help and be part of it. So.
And you know what? It's never good to sling hash. I think the other thing is like, if you're on social media and somebody says something mean to you, immediately you feel like reacting, take the high road. Don't do it. Don't name call. I know it's hard. I get a lot of people say mean things. The more you stay away from it, you just feel better. Don't get into the rabbit hole of that negative stuff. Live in the house of love. I know it's hard. It's the best if you can do it. I'm just saying.
That should be like a new album. You should start rapping.
If I could, my son raps, and I do too, but it's not very good. So
you're trying. Well, thank you so much for doing this. This was great. I really appreciate it. Everyone's going to love this episode. And
thanks, John.
You're very energetic. Great person. So
thank you, John. I love chatting with you. And when you're in the city, we're going to lunch.
Let me know when. Okay. Stay safe.
Hi,
John Schultz here. Thank you so much for tuning into this week's episode. Would really appreciate it if you would like, comment, subscribe, and share with your friends. Looking forward to being with you soon.